serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and an opportunity as you and your family prepare to give thanks this year to understand what it's like to be a Gold Star family that after decades of uncertainty finally receives the closure of knowing a loved one has been identified. Today we've heard from the families of two World War II Marines who just now in 2018 have been identified and will finally be laid to rest over the weeks ahead. Dwight Randall's family will watch him receive his long overdue military burial on November 20th. You've been hearing from his niece, Linda Gist, who has learned quite a bit about her uncle and about how our country honors the fallen.
It's a huge eye-opener, yeah. I am really taken back by it. I am impressed that the way they handled it. It's very professional. I never expected it. It really means a lot to everybody in the family. When you really get down to it, it means a lot.
And they sent you his medals and a bunch of other things that you never knew existed, I think, right? As far as the documentation, photos, information, what are some of the things that you've seen that you never would have seen without this happening?
Well, his whole DNA file, which to me is fascinating just in itself, how they identify people. His entire military record they gave us on a CD. They made a booklet of everything. They didn't lose anything. His entire military record has all of his allotments. It has his pay records. It has his mustered out sheets. It has when he checks in and checks out. Today, I was in business. People lose stuff like that, so that I was fascinated with. It is, I've learned so much about the military. I had no idea. I mean, we're not really a military family. They were attacked. He joined up 40 days, I think, after Pearl Harbor. And he was 22 when he was killed. Just a kid. My granddaughter's 22.
Yeah, I'm sure there are a lot of different ways you can go as far as the perspective that gives you. What about looking at the photos they sent you? Had you ever seen any of these photos before?
Yes, I had seen his one, he's smiling in his uniform, which is his Happy Marine one. Then we saw his enlistment photo, which is like all of our driver's license photos. It's a terrible photo. And then one of the ladies that on their Facebook page went and found his Roosevelt High School from the class of 39 yearbook photo. None of us had seen that. He had curly hair and, you know, he's like, oh, it's kind of neat to have him. And then she sent all of these photos from Tarawa after the battle that they were taking of his battalion, of the people that had remained in it. Not very many people that were in his group. I think six guys out of his entire group lived.
Yeah, and you have a picture of those guys standing around a sign that has a lot more than six names on it. Tell me about that picture and what it means to you.
The picture is in memory of the valiant dead, and they died proudly, and it's a 2nd Amphibian Tractor Battalion, and it has maybe 30 names on it, and then the six guys that were survivors were there. And they put that, it was on Tarawa, they had it there. I wouldn't think that they would even bother. That surprised me. And they buried these guys in the process of having a battle in this 1 square mile. They were getting killed. The burial squads were coming in behind them while they were still fighting. I'm not too sure I would even have gotten off one of those amphibious vehicles when they had to get out like 500 yards, I was reading, from the shore because they were hung up on the reef, and they had to wade like up to their necks in the water to get to shore while they were being shot at.
And you mentioned that he and others were buried there during the battle, but in order for him to be returned back here to his native Fresno, California, first they had to take him off there, take him to Hawaii. His remains have been in Hawaii for all these years until technology got to the point and funding and the willpower. I mean, how amazing is just that journey of how it's gone from 1943 to 2018? What do you understand about what it took to make that happen?
Well, from what I understand is originally they're buried like a trench. They wrapped them up and they buried them. And then after the end of the battle, they put them in graves and they tentatively identified the groups. There was, I think, six in his battalion that were together. Somehow dog tags were missing. He was killed in 43. In 46, they went and took the people in the graves. There was 580 Marines that they took to Schofield in Pearl Harbor, the base, and then they contacted the families of the ones they could identify, and the rest of them, they were buried at the Punch Bowl in an unknown soldier's grave. And so then as DNA became prevalent, then they started identifying more. His sister's DNA was the DNA that was used, and she was the last living relative.
And how long ago was it that she submitted her DNA?
Oh, I'm thinking 3 years ago. I didn't think that anything would come of it, to be honest with you.
And she passed away not knowing if anything would come of it either, right?
Right. She was in her 80s and she passed away and not maybe a year and a half ago.
How thankful are you that she did that before she passed?
I'm really grateful because my one cousin had bugged her about it and she did it. And her husband had been in the military, and I think that was something that got her to do it. I don't think she probably sent it in and probably didn't think that they'd ever do anything with it. At least that's the way I would feel. You know, I would give it to him, but, you know, what's going to come of it?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think you and I would be having this conversation if she hadn't done that. You wouldn't know any of these things about your uncle, right?
I would not have known anything about my uncle, but I would not have become a World War II buff now. That it's really fascinating me. So now I really I'm interested in everything about the war to see how that war was fought. It was a real interesting war because it was on two different shores. It was a bloodbath.
Do you understand your uncle's sacrifice in a different light now? Do you have a different perspective on the importance of what he and the other 406,000 Americans who died in World War II did, the 16 million in uniform in World War II, how significant what they did was?
Yes, and I don't think they really knew what they were getting into when all of this was taking place and these guys were on those landing vehicles. I was reading in this book that they actually had kind of thought that the Japanese had left and it wasn't going to be a big deal because they weren't being fired on right then. There's 53,000. The number boggles my mind. 53,000 soldiers still missing from the war. A lot of them are at the bottom of the ocean. But that's what the Marines were telling us, that they still have 53,000 that are missing. That's a huge amount. It's unbelievable to me.
Well, that means there are a lot of other families out there that may not even know it's possible for this kind of closure or awareness or understanding to be achieved. And they're hearing you right now tell this story, and they're saying, well, maybe they can do this for my grandpa or my uncle or whomever. What would you say to those people who maybe lost hope a long time ago that something like this was even possible?
Get on the internet, get a hold of the military branch that your relatives were in and see if you can send in DNA. Because if you never received any information about them or they were missing, you could probably find them because they're searching for families. In the beginning, it doesn't really mean a lot, but once they start finding them and you start finding out these things, it does mean a lot.
Well, I guess that was my other question. And I know when you're there at the gravesite and you're with your family members watching your uncle's remains be honored with full military honors that way, I'm sure that's going to be moving. But it sounds like maybe there was a time where you even thought, well, what's the point of this? What are they really going to do with all of this? What have you learned is the point? Why is this important to find those who gave their lives for us and find a way to honor and respect them the way they deserve?
I think we should respect them, that's for sure, because being the age I am, I think that there's a lot of respect has been lost, and I think that we need to find these things again and learn to appreciate the country we live in. It means more than you can imagine when you really get down to it. I know it meant a lot to me to be able to have him buried next to my dad, and it would be nice if my dad knew it.
Did your dad ever tell you much about him?
He followed the war. He used to watch Victory at Sea, and he read a lot of things, and the Tarawa book that I have was his. Just in passing, you know, when you just talk about people at Christmas time or something, he would talk about it. He didn't really like talking about it because he didn't like to be sad. And he was remembered always as a great kid because he was 22 and, you know, everyone loved him.
What would you say is the most important thing that this last month or so has taught you?
Personally, myself, closure is a big deal. I never really thought it was. I think our country is a great country. I just had no idea that how great it was.
And the sacrifices of people like Jack Cremaine and Dwight Randall have served to preserve the uniqueness of America. That's Linda Giss talking about her uncle Dwight, who will be laid to rest November 20th, 2018, 75 years after he was killed in the early moments of the bloody Battle of Tarawa. These families shared their stories with us today to honor their loved ones, but also to encourage others who might be in similar situations. And that probably applies to more people than we realize. There's a wonderful website devoted to this topic. I have it linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com, but it's pretty easy to remember, too. Missingmarines.com. It's the brainchild of Jeffrey Raker, who encourages all families of missing servicemen to submit DNA samples and stay in close contact with the DPAA. Because he's seen that kind of advocacy pay off with the kind of results we've heard about today.
So I started Missing Marines in 2011. I became interested in the story of Sergeant Arthur Irvin, who was a member of the 24th Marines, 4th Marine Division. Sergeant Irvin was the second in command of an ancestor of mine, First Lieutenant Philip Emerson Wood Jr., and the two of them were killed on the same day on Saipan in the same incident on a patrol to rescue some civilians out of a cave. I'd been trying to tell the story of their company and naturally got very interested in this, the story of their last patrol. It sounded like a very kind of Hollywood moment. You have the lieutenant being shot and the sergeant, you know, famous last words, "Don't worry, I'm coming for you," running out and being shot right beside him. That kind of drove me to figure out what had happened to the sergeant. And much to my surprise, I found out that he had never been accounted for after the war. And I wondered how that could be. I had all of these letters and these eyewitness reports that said the two of them were buried side by side. So how could this one man be unaccounted for? So just starting to get into that story, I then realized there were two other members of the battalion who were also killed on Saipan who had not been accounted for. And it all just kind of snowballed from there. And I also have a member of my own family, an officer in the Navy, who's unaccounted for from the Battle of Guadalcanal. So I started to get interested in trying to solve some of these mysteries and really got fascinated in kind of the unfinished stories. I think the characterization of missing in action or not recovered, it's a story without an ending. So trying to figure out what had happened and put as many of the pieces together as I could really kind of drew me in. So I started Missing Marines as an attempt to tell some of these stories. And I started very ambitiously thinking that I was going to be able to do a full biography of every single member of the Marine Corps that has not been accounted for since the war. And at the time I started, there were just over 3,000 of them. And I got going with a lot more, I should say, probably more enthusiasm than actual know-how. It's sort of morphed and evolved since then, and it's become more of an advocacy website. I found it's been very helpful just to have a little bit of the information out there. People who go searching for family members will find it, and then we'll start having a dialogue, and I'll help them out with some research and send them off to kind of continue their own exploration. And I've been able to help with a couple of actual recoveries as well and contacting family members that way. That's pretty much the point of the site. It's been a kind of a long-running effort to make sure that these stories aren't forgotten and actually do some proactive work to try and account for some of these guys.
What advice would you have for someone who has a loved one who's never been recovered, who's saying, where do I even start and why should I even try? Is there really the hope that my loved one is going to be discovered and identified someday?
It's true. There are some of these men are never going to be found for one reason or another. They were in an airplane that went down at sea, or at a ship that went down to sea. They were in a submarine that just disappeared. You think about the effects that, you know, the weapons of the time could have on the human body and the effects that the passage of time and the conditions in which these remains were buried can have on the human body. And it's easy to think, well, you know, it's been so long, so much time has passed, how can we possibly hope to recover anyone? But my advice would be don't give up just because it seems impossible, because strange things do happen. As far as first steps, my advice would be learn as much as you can about your ancestor. You can acquire their records, usually from the National Archives in St. Louis. The next step, sort of once you've started to understand their story, where they were stationed, sort of what the last known circumstances are before they were either missing or killed, is to start getting acquainted with the DPAA, which is the Defense POW/MAA Accounting Agency. And they're the current government group that's in charge of accounting for our missing and, you know, non-recovered servicemen. Just from my personal experience, the DPAA is doing a much better job than the predecessors were. And they've also shown a much more kind of willingness to work with independent research groups like History Flight or the Bent Prop Project or Ted Darcy, WFI research organization. And that's really given a lot of attention and I think really a lot of success. The more they succeed, the more kind of inspired they are to, you know, to try harder. So you have an event like the exhuming the unknowns from the Oklahoma, which was kind of resisted at many levels for a very long time. And there had to be a lot of campaigning done to get those graves exhumed. And you'd think, well, how hard can it be? They're right there in Hawaii. But, you know, there's a lot of politics and a lot to consider. But the fact that they've had such an amazing success with finding the Marines and the sailors there, I think it's been really inspiring for that agency. And the success of finding the men from Tarawa really brought that into the news. And so they have a project. I believe this is where Sergeant Randall was found. His remains were actually recovered from Bastio in 1946, and they couldn't be identified at the time. They were brought to the National Memorial Cemetery of the Pacific, and he was just there as an unknown for decades. But the sudden kind of resurgence of interest in the missing from Tarawa has led the DPA to exhume the unknowns from that battle. And they've been also been having a great deal of success there as well.
Well, last thing for you, Jeff. I'm sure that spending these last 7 years at this kind of pursuit, even if you can't devote as much time to it as you'd love to, that it must have taught you some things. It must have changed your perspective a little bit. It must have added something to your life. What would you say the biggest impact of this focus, this concentration, this interest has been for you?
It's changed sort of what I understood about the nature of loss in wartime. I'm not from a particularly military family. We did have and had several relatives who served in World War II. We didn't do terribly well. Two of them were killed, and that was kind of it. But you know, you grow up, you know, hearing about them from your, you know, if you're my generation, from your grandparents or, you know, from your parents or that sort of thing. And you kind of get the idea that, okay, this person was killed and it was terrible then, but there was some sort of sense of closure. And now kind of at this remove, it's healed somewhat. You know, your grandparents may still be sad about the loss of a brother or a cousin, but by and large, that wound has healed. With someone who's missing or there's not been a body that can be brought back for burial, there isn't that sense of closure. There's always kind of that open questioning as to what happened. For many, many years after the war, there was the question, are they really dead? Are they in a hospital somewhere with amnesia and they just don't know? You know, how could the Army, you know, tell me one thing that he was buried here and then all of a sudden not know where his body was? A lot of their files have letters from their family that were written back and forth. The amount of pain that these families are going through is really heartrending. And that's something that I think the more removed we get from that moment, you know, the less we kind of understand. You know, you can go to a cemetery and see all the lines of crosses. You can see the names on the, you know, on the Vietnam Memorial, and it's very moving. And you can, you know, watch documentaries and hear stories, and, you know, go to, you know, Memorial Day observances. But there's an immediacy to that when the question is not answered. That's really, really very moving. Once you start to get more exposed to that, you'll never know firsthand what that felt like, but it gives you a much deeper appreciation for the sacrifices that not just that the soldiers made, but that everybody made, that their families made, that their loved ones made, that their friends made. And that really gives you, I think, a much better, more complete picture of kind of the trauma that is warfare.
Understanding everything that you just described, has that had an impact on the way you view America or the freedoms that we have here?
It does. I find it inspiring that people are willing to go out and fight for the intangible idea of what this country stands for, what they think it should stand for. So it sort of just kind of reinforced that feeling kind of to the nth degree. When the country gets involved in a war, we're not just asking a lot of the people in uniform, you're asking a lot of the entire population. I've heard some veterans as well sort of echo this sentiment, and you need to make damn sure you know exactly what you're getting into and look for as many ways to avoid that sort of situation as you can.
That's Jeffrey Raker, the man behind MissingMarines.com. Link to it at HometownHeroesRadio.com, where you'll also find a link to Jeff's upcoming book, Leaving Mac Behind, The Lost Marines of Guadalcanal. Thanks to Jeff and again to Linda Gist, Donna Morin, and Elaine Holliday for giving us a picture of how these families are processing the long-awaited news that their loved ones are coming home and will finally be laid to rest. those two young Marines, one at Pearl Harbor on the USS Oklahoma, one on the bloody beach of Tarawa. They helped put names and faces to a simple statement that we should never lose sight of and never allow to become cliché. Those same four words we finish with every time here on Hometown Heroes. So as you gather with your family this Thanksgiving, think about that Gold Star family that's missing a hero at the holiday table. And let the legacies of courageous Americans like Jack Tremaine and Dwight Randall remind you that freedom is not free.